Here we go, recording has started. Okay. And here we go. Okay. Thank you everyone for coming. It's a pleasure to see everybody. And wish you all a good and Erev Shabbos. The late great architect, Frank Lloyd Wright, once said, "The architect's two most important tools are the eraser in the drafting room and the wrecking bar on site." The value of the eraser, knowing what to cut out, what not to publish. It isn't only true for the architect. Every good writer puts serious thought into every single paragraph, sentence, and word that they print. They write numerous drafts, carefully refining, editing, and distilling their work. If there's anything extra, be it a paragraph, sentence, or even just one word, they erase it. They press delete. Because wordiness cheapens our language. It devalues the words that are meaningful. But the opposite is true as well. One of the most famous speeches in American history, a speech that forever changed the course of the U.S., a speech that galvanized the American spirit and commitment to fight and sacrifice for the sake of this country's vision of life and liberty for all, this speech that was delivered on November 19th, 1863, almost 157 years ago to this day, the speech that began with the words, "Four score and 7 years ago," this speech known as the Gettysburg Address was only 273 words long. But in those 273 words, Abraham Lincoln inspired the hearts of many and transformed the destiny of our country to be a beacon and shining light to the world of what it means to be a free society. Because precision is concision. This principle is one of the most basic in written literature. It's universal. And you would expect that God, the author of the best-selling book in human history, the Torah, to be careful with his word choice as well. The perfect book by the perfect author should be perfectly precise. Nothing unnecessary, nothing extra. And as a matter of fact, the Talmud says as such, every word in the Torah is absolutely necessary. There are no extra words at all. Each one is coming to play a specific purpose, be it halachic, agadic, etc. Every paragraph, every sentence, every word is there for a reason. And yet, in this week's Parsha, something absolutely uncharacteristic seems to take place. Perek Chaf Dalet, the 24th chapter of Sefer Bereishis, one of the longest prakim in the entire Torah, 67 psukim long, seems to have a large percentage that is absolutely adding nothing. It appears to be completely extraneous. The perek begins by telling us that Avram needed a shidduch, a wife, for his son Yitzchak. So he sends his servant Eliezer to go find one from Avram's hometown, Aram Naharaim. So Eliezer gathers these things together and begins his journey. When he arrives there, he devises a plan for how he is going to find the perfect young lady for Yitzchak. He sets up shop next to the well, him and all his gonza of camels, and waits to see if any girl will come and offer to help provide water for him and his animals. And if that will happen, he proclaims, if a girl will go out of their way to do chesed with a complete stranger, then that lady, that young woman, is the right one for Yitzchak. That girl is fit to be a matriarch of the Jewish people. And he then proceeds to pray to God for this to happen. And lo and behold, such a girl by the name of Rivka comes by, and she goes out of her way to offer water from the well for Eliezer and his camels. Immediately, Eliezer knows this is the right girl for Yitzchak. This is the one. So he asks her, please, can you take me to your parents' house so I can ask your father for your hand in marriage for my master, Yitzchak? The Torah then relates that Eliezer arrives at Rivka's house and begins to tell her father, Besuel, the whole backstory, starting with how he worked for Avraham, the whole everything, the whole kit, kat, and caboodle. Now, if this would be a Disney movie or a book written by Dickens, Thoreau, or Joyce, it would have said something along the lines of, Eliezer told Besuel everything that just happened. That simple. That concise. However, instead, the Torah goes into extreme detail and relates Eliezer's entire speech to Besuel. He worked for Avraham. He sent him to find a wife and devise a plan and Rivka get camels to drink. Yada, yada. The entire thing repeats the entire story. Yes, Besuel needed to hear it all. But why in the world do we need to hear it again? Couldn't the Torah just say, and Eliezer told Besuel everything that happened? There are so many things the Torah doesn't spell out. And it leaves us to have to learn it out from a letter, a word, a hint here or there. And yet this whole repetitive speech is completely spelled out in its entirety. Why? What is going on here? He was almost finished. What he believed to be his lifelong dream and mission was almost complete. Rabbi Moshe Isserles, the Ramah, one of the leading authorities of 16th century Ashkenazi Jewry, was about ready to publish a work that would completely transform the clarity, organization, and accessibility of practical halacha to both the rabbi, the scholar, and the layman. He had spent years studying and culling the various halachic opinions on every topic, every subject that had been written since the publication of the Talmud, organizing, clarifying, categorizing, and simplifying all these views into clear, instructive sefer. And suddenly, before he brought his book to the printer, he got word of a new sefer, a new book that was just published out of the city of Tzfat by another great rabbinic figure, the Sephardic Rabbi Yosef Karo. A copy of this new book was sent directly to Rabbi Isserles, and as he opened it up, he couldn't believe his eyes. It was the same thing. The new book titled the Shulchan Aruch was written in the exact same style and format of the book that he was about ready to publish, a clear and organized sefer and all practical modern day halacha. He read through the entire thing, noting all the places that he disagreed with Rabbi Karo. And then he did something that is almost unimaginable. He took the manuscript for his own book, the one he'd been working on for years and was about ready to publish, and put it away, never bringing it to print. He then went ahead and wrote minor gloss on the page of the Shulchan Aruch, just noting all the places where Ashkenazi tradition differed. Instead of publishing his own standalone sefer, he completely integrated his work within that of the Shulchan Aruch. Jewish historians look back and note how extraordinary this act, this self-nullification, the sacrifice of his own personal success and life work truly was. Because perhaps even more valuable a contribution than the words that Rabbi Isserles chose to print are all the words that he chose not to print. Because by doing so, by appending his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, he established its authority for world Jewry, creating the first common authoritative text for Ashkenazi and Sephardic Jews since the publication of the Talmud. Sometimes, even more valuable than what we say or write is what we leave unsaid. The Medrash relates a fantastic miracle happened to Eliezer while he was traveling to Aram Naharaim to find a wife for Yitzchak. His journey was miraculously cut in half. A trip that normally should have taken days took Eliezer less than one day, an open miracle. A few months ago, I was going to a dinner party, and Wei said that I was supposed to arrive at 6:03 p.m. You'll never believe it, But I got there at 5:50, 13 minutes early. Let's just say everyone at that dinner that evening heard about my incredible driving skills, how I beat Waze. Eliezer didn't just beat Waze. He pulverized it. He cut his ETA in half. And he didn't even speed. He was riding a camel. And if I was Eliezer, that would have happened to me. I'd have been so proud, so excited, the miracle that happened to me. I most definitely would have let it slip at least once. Rivka's father, hey, by the way, no big deal, but God does amazing miracles for me. I beat Waze. And yet, Eliezer makes zero mention of it. He repeats his entire story to Besuel and leaves out his miracle. And that explains Rav Shimon Schwab, the late great leader of the German Jewish community in Washington Heights, Manhattan. It's why the Torah goes out of its way to spell Eliezer's entire speech, to highlight what he left unsaid. It wasn't as if Eliezer was shy and didn't want to speak up. He told Besuel everything that happened. That is everything except for the tidbit that was potentially self-aggrandizing. And that's why the Gemara refers to Eliezer's speech as yafeh, beautiful and meaningful, because he was teaching us a crucial life lesson. First and foremost, he was teaching us what it means to be humble. Eliezer knew that this journey, this mission, wasn't about him. He wasn't there for himself, so he didn't make it about himself. Even though it is human nature for Eliezer to have wanted to share his amazing miracle, but he held back. And he didn't mention. He didn't need to brag for no reason. And although this sounds simple, we all know it's difficult. It isn't easy. It requires a lot of self-confidence and self-worth to not feel the need to boast about our accolades and accomplishments, to not feel the desire to leave subtle hints in our speech, letting everyone know what makes us so great. But more broadly than a lesson in humility, the Torah, Eliezer was teaching us that sometimes even more valuable than what we do say is what we choose not to say. Be it holding back from saying something hurtful, even if we feel the other person deserved it. We're making sure that when we do speak, we mean what we say. That we are careful with the words that come out of our mouths. That we don't use harsh or extreme language for no reason. In modern society, we have completely cheapened the words hate and love when they are used to describe how we feel about irrelevant, trivial, and insignificant details of our lives. Or even just being sensitive in more subtle contexts. How often do friends or family members want to share an interesting tidbit of information with us? And as they begin to say their story or fact, we realize that we already know what they are about to say. At that point, we have two choices. We can either react how we normally do by saying, oh, I already knew that. I already heard that. Which completely deflates the excitement and positive feeling of the person who shared the information with us. Or we can choose to say, oh, wow, so interesting. Thank you for sharing. And in that moment, we elevate that person. We make them feel good that they were able to share something interesting and meaningful with us. All of this is about training ourselves to hold back before we blurt out the first thought that comes into our heads. To add a few moments of thought before we speak. Because by doing so, not only do we help ensure that we erase the hurtful, insensitive, and boastful comments from our speech, but like Abe Lincoln, we also add value and meaning to things that we do say. Our speech, our words, become more impactful and resonant. It's our choice. And it's a choice that we make hundreds and thousands of times every single day. Let's make the next one, our next choice, what we choose to and not to say, meaningful and uplifting. Thank you. Okay. We have finished our...